This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin St. Pierre. So we have Thought Council. Unfortunately, Teresa Oakley-Smith woke up this morning feeling a bit ill, so she won't be joining us. But we still have Yonela Tiko, who's the spokesperson for the Minister of Human Settlements and Water and Sanitation. But we're speaking in with him in his capacity as the author of an opinion piece that he wrote looking at Senegal versus what he calls Senegal farmers versus the state. What happened to the new voortrekker? And saying that, what is the contribution? That's the question. What is the contribution of Afrikaners to the fundamental social transformation as envisaged in the commitments of our constitution? And in the opinion piece as well, what Yonela argues is that today the old voortrekker has stormed the houses of justice, ready to confront and test the might of the state, all to demand to be treated differently, to be treated better, with greater privilege and special resources than the rest of the country. Because, unlike the rest of the country, which is also facing high rates of crime, the old voortrekker's security must be guaranteed, as they are, of course, providing us with the most important resource, which is food. Most importantly, they are Afrikaners, citizens with a higher premium than the rest of us. And that is at the core also for me of what's currently happening and what happened when they stormed the court. Ngama firearm. And even the audacity to set off a firearm in court. And then we're also joined by Professor Theodore Petrus, who's an Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of the Free State. And what Professor Theodore will do is looking at tracking the various themes around racism that have come out since 1994 and looking, of course, at a culture survey. For instance, if you look at between 1999 and 2004, he writes that between that time, South African organizations were dealing with the issues of transformation in line with the country's recent transition. The salient issues emerging from culture surveys point on to the one hand to a white resistance to the Employment Equity Act. Remember that? And on the other hand, the distrust and feeling of disrespect of their languages and cultures felt by black respondents. Racism towards blacks seems to have been overt during this phase, with verbal and sometimes physical abuse being prevalent. So those are the conversations that we're having. We'll also take your calls on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. Yonela, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Morning, Aldrin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for making time for us. And Professor Theodore, good morning.
Good morning, Aldrin. Thank you for the opportunity.
Really appreciate that you've made time for us as well. Yonela, let's start off with your conversation. And of course, in your opinion piece, what you do as well, looking at the Afrikaner leaders who broke rank and met the ANC in Dakar in Senegal.
Yes. After my article was published yesterday, so I got a few messages from some Afrikaner people thanking me for the article. And I think that's the problem, because the Afrikaner progressives who are responsible for building the bridge and closing the gulf between blacks and Afrikaners and brought us to the moment that we are in, have somehow gone silent. And they've left this vacuum that is occupied by these Afrikaner extreme nationalists, the Afri Forums, the farmers, the FF Plus. You will know FF Plus was actually founded by Christian Feljoen, who actually wanted, who had the nerve to ask for a false start. But of course, they were sort of defeated by the sense of urgency and the sense of boldness of the Afrikaner progressives. Mm-hmm. And I think my article really is the clarion call. Afrikaner progressives, it's time to lead.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they do have the capacity to lead, or are you saying lead their community?
We had then IDASA, which was, of course, this vehicle that they had used, of course, led by Frederick van Zylslabbert, Alex Borrein, which was really, of course, filled by academics, thinkers, and progressives on the ground. And it was really a force to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe because of the democracy, the sense of beauty of those moments, there was a lull and a sense that maybe we've achieved what we wanted to achieve, and then it sort of subsided. But, I mean, every article you read, like I was reading some articles yesterday on News 24, you get, when there's a query, they would ask a professor in UNIS, an Africana professor, who's going to say, there is really no singular attack on farmers. You know, they are, in fact, they have the lowest crime than the rest of the country. But those voices are muted. They just respond to that query and that query. So I feel like the progressives need to be organized, need to stand up, need to realize that the work that we started is not done, and they need to really push forward.
Do you, though, in just looking and looking at our social setting at the moment, do you see the Afrikaner, the Afrikaner movement feeling that it is part of this South Africa, this democratic state, or do they have their own agenda, which is separate to the agenda of national unity?
Yeah, and you know, I do think that, and it may well be that I'm overly optimistic, but yeah. I mean, I do think that the ranks, I mean, you go to Stellenbosch University, you go to business, there are Afrikaners who are working every day, doing the basic things, taking their kids to school, contributing to the economy, doing their job, and so on. And they really have no time for these, of course, even for politics and time for the things that I think were bricks that were needed to build. But they are the rational, centrist, ordinary voices. And I think the problem, of course, is that the narrative is usually driven by people who are hungry, who are driven, who push. You know, the AfriForums, who are going to international organizations looking for this and the other. And I think, to me, it would be a big misjudgment, a mistake on the progressives to allow the black-white confrontation, which they partly resolved by standing in the gap. There shouldn't be a conversation now between black people, I suppose represented by now the angry EFF, and Afrikaners represented by the angry AfriForum. Now there should be that voice, the middle voice, the rational voice, the voice that said that we're all trying to contribute to this new South Africa. That's the voice that should be heard. And I think, to me, I believe there's enough people who are rational, enough people who have taken that bold decision, who are good to their neighbors. And if those people are not waking up, then we might actually have that war that's driven by extreme voices.
Yeah. Okay, Professor Tia, though, your take on this, and also, as Yonela says, that he may be too optimistic. And just the point that he made now towards the end, he speaks about we are all contributing to this new South Africa. And that, because that feels like it is an assumption, you know, but it is something that we should be expecting at the same time.
I have to say that I'm actually in full agreement with what Yonela has stated, because I think part of the reason why we find ourselves in this situation that we're in at the moment is not only because of the reactionary voices that we find, but it is also because we don't seem to be implementing what we are told by our leadership is what we are trying to achieve in this country. For how many years haven't we heard the same story over and over again about us trying to build a non-racial, non-sexist society? But yet time and time again, we see incidences that have been happening almost at a regular rate of the incidences that have national importance, national significance, and the recent events in Senegal is just the latest in a long line of these examples. And the first reaction that we see is the very same political leadership coming out on public platforms and making statements
mm-hmm.
that people have interpreted as divisive.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at social media with the statements that were made by the leadership of the EFF recently, we saw there that there was immediately a polarization of responses in the public.
Yeah.
There were those who were in full support of the call to arms by the EFF leadership, whereas there were also others that were very critical of those statements.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question that I'm asking is, what are we really trying to do here? Are we just simply paying lip service to the notion of us building this non-racial society where we all take hands together and build a society contributing, as Yonella has indicated,
mm-hmm.
or are these just things that are just being said just to appease us as South African citizens and to create
yep.
the idea or the illusion that this is what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, we are actually doing the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why in the article that I published,
yeah.
I asked the question of, do we have a culture of violence in South Africa? Because all of these incidences, the Senekal incident is just the latest, as I said. But issues of farm murders, racial tensions, violent crime, responses of political leadership to these issues, all of these things are not new. These things have been coming on for years and years and years.
Mm.
But yet every time an incident happens and it makes it onto the national agenda, we find ourselves having exactly the same arguments, debates, conversations that we have been having all this time. So why have we not really made any progress
yeah.
in terms of achieving this united front of together building the South African society that we are striving towards?
Is it also not probably the perception that there is a black agenda and then there is a white agenda? Like, for instance, now what you see happening outside Senekal Court, there seemingly seems to be a white agenda. And when I speak about the white agenda, specifically in this case, speaking about Afrikaners, you know, they have their own agenda. And then you have the black South Africans, of course, now being led by the EFF outside their court. They also have their own agenda. And when Yonella speaks about the old Voortrekker has stormed the house of justice, has stormed the houses of justice, is it that they've stormed the houses of justice or they've stormed the houses of justice that are being led by a black government?
The questions that I have are the following. First of all, who is the old Voortrekker?
Mm-hmm.
The second question is, whose white and whose black agenda is at play? Sometimes we do tend to oversimplify things
mm-hmm.
and overgeneralize. And because there might be a few pockets in these communities that may have certain agendas, we can sometimes erroneously assume that is an agenda that is supported by the majority of the people who form part of that particular group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is very important that we need to be very clear about and ask these critical questions about whose agendas are actually at play here
mm-hmm.
and who speaks for whom when it comes to these agendas. Because from my perspective, what the issue here is about violent crime. And that is not a white issue. It's
yeah.
not a black issue. It is an issue that affects all of us as South Africans. But the minute you start finding these issues that are of national importance hijacked
mm.
by certain factions in whatever group,
mm.
this is what then starts to distort how we need to be looking at these issues. And this, I think, is another reason why it becomes difficult for us as a nation to approach these issues together in the way that we should approach them, because these are issues that affect all of us, it makes sense that we need to approach these issues together
yeah.
so we can find common solutions to deal with these issues.
Yeah.
But when they are hijacked by interests and agendas that, as far as I am concerned, are not reflective of the majority of the people in this country,
mm-hmm.
that is when we start picking up these kinds of problems. And now you have this polarization and you have the manufacture of perceived racial tensions and racial conflicts that there perhaps wouldn't have been in the first place. and we start shifting our focus away from what is the main issue, which is violent crime, and we become sidetracked by these other issues, and then, whether intentional or not, end up supporting these agendas of the few that certainly do not reflect the points of view of the many.
Okay, Prof, why do you call them perceived racial tension?
I call them perceived racial tensions because we can never be too sure of what we are presented with is in fact a true reflection of reality. Of course, you have to look at things within the right context, and within our context here in South Africa, issues of racism and racial tensions have been there for a long time. And taking me back to what I've just said now about whose agenda are we actually dealing with, you will find that there are those in prominent positions of leadership that are quite comfortable with using racial tensions as a viable tool to promote certain ideas or certain agendas.
But that doesn't renege the fact that there are racial tensions. Whether somebody hijacks the racial tension, that doesn't mean that it is perceived racial tension. I have a problem with your characterization of perceived racial tension. The racial tension does exist. It's there. But whether it's being hijacked by an interest group becomes a different conversation. But the racial tension does exist. And even if you look at our economy, it tells us that. Even if you look at the employment equity reports that come out every year, it tells us that, in fact, in detail, with data.
Now, if we have a post-apartheid government in place, then the question that I'm asking is that why then do we still have racial tension? Why do we still have it? With all of the policies, with all of the progress that's been made since 1994, why is it still there? So the question is,
Let me jump in there, Eldon.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Well, first of all, I think the last question from the prof is a little dishonest. I don't know what he expected to have been achieved in the space that we have, given the centuries of racial segregation. However, I must say, when I read the prof's article, it really not to offend him, but it really gave me a sense of Trumpism. You know, this inability to allocate blame when it's due to the farmers who messed up in Senegal, and then draw a false equivalence with the reaction of the other group, which is the EFF, and then whitewash it with the cultural as a culture problem. You know, I think to me that is the core problem. It's either moral or immoral equivalence in order to then move from putting faces to the problem and say, no, we have a culture of violence, almost like Akris saying, I need bail because, you know, we have a culture of corruption here. You messed up. So let's say the Senegal farmers, they messed up. They really tried to test the might of the state. And there's no rational explanation to that, except that they think that a murder of a farmer is somehow different to the violent murders that happens in the country. I mean, the stats are clear. You had 21,022 murders in 2018-2019 in South Africa. 2,700 were women, 1,069 were children, only 47 were farmers. And in that 47, that includes farm workers, farm owners, farm visitors. It's ridiculous that they would react in the way they did. And it's undermining the state, and it's not ridiculous to assume that it's because they think they can test a black state. But we then have to say, that's why I then say that group then, to me, becomes the old Ford Trekker, because that's how they behaved in 1994. They actually, Mandela actually received intelligence in 1993 that apartheid generals actually wanted to take over the state. They would kidnap Mandela, they would kidnap de Klerk, all the people who were trying to push the country forward. They said they could take the country in 48 hours. Mandela tested that, and then he went to Porta, and Porta did a few things. So you've always had people who did not want to be part of the new South Africa, and either they were beating their time, whatever they were doing. So we have to place blame. We have to put face and say, these people are messing up, and let's put that out. And then, of course, we then say, how do we move forward? And my suggestion is that we do have Afrikaners who should be speaking to other Afrikaners to avoid it being a black and white thing. The Afrikaners that know that these Afrikaners, the ones in Senegal, are messing up, they must speak out and say, you guys are messing up. This is not the Saturday we want. Nothing special about, okay, crime is bad, but it's not really driven either by race in murders being killed. Some experts say it's actually an economic thing, and it's the numbers are too low. In fact, in 2001, there were 1,000 attacks. And then in 2018, there were 500. That attacks deaths, there were 140. Now there's like 40, 47. So they are declining over time. But for some reason, we let these extreme voices to push the thing. So I think the professor must put some blame to the Senegal farmers, condemn them, and then, of course, we suggest how do we move forward.
Okay, Prof?
Well, let me start by saying that I don't condone the responses or the reactions of any community that responds violently or that engages in violent protests. And the question that I also have is, are the farmers in Senegal who reacted violently, is that the only example of communities testing the might and authority of the state? I think that there have been many examples that we've seen.
I think you're doing it again, this false equivalence.
But Prof, like what?
We see it on an almost regular basis with violent protests. Is that not an example of protesters testing the might of the state?
But why do you try to draw these comparisons between what and I know that you're not saying black people, but that's what you're implying.
That black people have been
testing the might of the state.
What I'm saying is that responses, we should be looking at this holistically. We are not singling out certain groups and saying one group is better than another.
Why do you do that? We have a problem now we're facing. Why can't you condemn it in its own merit?
I've just said that I don't condone the reactions of the white farmers and how they responded.
That's not the same.
And equally, I don't condone the reactions of any community that responds violently, regardless of what the issue is that they are dealing with.
Let me give it to you, Prof.
Okay, we'll take your calls after this, 061-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.